Welcome to Can Queer, home of Canada's queer media. My name is Luke Smith.
My name is Sebastian. And before we start,
that was like a YouTube opening. I don't know if you've seen like YouTube videos like, hello, my monkeys, and welcome to my show. They are so, they're dialed up to a 10 when they do their intros.
We have not named our fan base. Do you know, actually, the person who innovated naming their fan base is basically the guy who basically just invented YouTube, kind of. So, Zay Frank, he's still out there. He does the, like, sad cat videos and stuff. In 2004, he did a video series called The Show with Zay Frank. And he referred to his fan base as sports racers. And I was an original sports racer. I was very happy, yeah.
So, we don't have a name, a collective name for the fans of our show.
I think we usually refer to it as Sebastian's mom. Even if it is not specifically my mother, we will say, like, Sebastian's mom sent us a text.
Absolutely. You know what? Yeah, that's it. All fans of our show will now be known as Sebastian's mom. Thank you so much for listening, everybody. To all the Sebastian's mums out there, we appreciate you participating. I'm going to write that down. That's a great one. Now, what a week it has been, as per the usual. Now, let me just start off by saying we are well aware of the US election.
Oh, yeah.
And the impacts that it has on, you know, LGBT rights in the state and therefore the rest of the world. We were talking about how Mike Pompeo would rather see us back in 1948's level of civil rights.
Yeah.
You know, it's a huge global impact, this US election.
Yeah.
But we ain't got no time for that.
Well, it's really weird. You know what I mean? You and I talk about politics a lot, but I think it was, I don't know, it was like about a year ago where the two of us were like, I think I might be done with American politics. Because it's like, well, I heard this. It's like, let's probably a lie. And then you look it up, you're like, oh, it's only half true. Well, I heard this. It's probably a lie. There's just so much misinformation coming out that you just kind of shrug and go, well, you know, it appears that blah-de-blah-de-blah, and it could be that blah-de-blah-de-blah, but we might learn in a week that everything that we think now is completely and totally false.
Yeah.
And it's bipartisan. It doesn't matter if you're on either side of the aisle or down the middle. You're just, it's, so nowadays when I hear things, I'm just like, I don't know. It's probably true, but only partly true, but not necessarily in a true. That should get me as infuriated as people want me to be infuriated. So, I mean,
yeah,
we haven't been speaking about American politics for a while now for a list of reasons. And that is one of them, that we don't know how reliable what we're looking at is anymore.
Well, yeah, there's that. And, you know, we definitely know that, you know, the potential appointment of the new Supreme Court judge, you know, Coney Barrett in the U.S., could have huge impacts.
I don't like to disparage people, but she seems far too dim. I like to think the system's going to stop.
Apparently she's as sharp as a whippet, you know. Although apparently whippets aren't sharp. You know, she's as sharp as a tank. And, you know,
isn't a whippet when you stick whipped cream up your nose?
I think it's also a little small dessert thing.
Because there's the,
but it's a breed of dog. It's a breed of every stupid dog. And my aunt.
Because there's nitrous oxide. There's laughing gas inside of whipped cream cans. Don't do this at home, kids.
No, don't smell whipped cream. That's not cool. But no, she was telling me that. I was like, oh, this sharp as a whippet. And I always thought it meant, you know, particularly sharp. And they're like, no, it's an old British euphemism for, like, not actually very sharp at all.
Mm.
As sharp as a very dim dog.
Like corgis. Corgis are known for being obedient. Like, all corgi intelligence comes from the fact that they do what they're told. And otherwise, left to their own devices, they're bloody stupid.
Yeah, I am not fans of corgis. Don't tell my boss. Can't stand them. You know, I prefer an intelligent dog. Not to say that my boss's dog is not intelligent.
If you consistently issue commands, they're very sweet.
I'm a little worried because our show is syndicated, and as long as none of the radio station managers are listening, I'm going to tattle on me to my boss that I don't think his dog's intelligent, then we should be okay. No, I bring it up because, you know, we are very well aware of these things going on.
But,
you know, our listeners don't want us to be going on and on about, you know, Coney Barrett, you know, the Supreme Court judge nominee, or, you know, Biden says this, Trump says that. You know, we don't want, you know, let's wait until the election shakes out.
Yeah.
And then we'll talk about what the impact could be globally. Because in the meantime, the rest of the world actually has some really exciting LGBT news out and about, including, let's actually start off, not particularly gay, but kind of interesting, a story that broke, you know, across Quebec, started in Montreal.
Right.
And we picked it up on about a week later in Ottawa, because in Gatineau, just over the river from mm-hmm. where we are in Ottawa, a bunch of boys had decided to wear skirts to the school.
Yep.
And I was like, I mean, this is just, you know, high school boys doing
high school boy things. For as long as we've been in the radio, we've been seeing high school boys doing skirt protests for various reasons. And just over the years, like, there was one in the UK, I think there's one in Australia. So this is, the idea of doing a skirt protest is not necessarily anything new. But what is the drive behind the Quebec
protest? Well, when I heard about the one in Gatineau, it was like, the boys were like, oh, we're protesting because, you know, the girls get penalized for having skirts too short.
Yeah.
But the boys can go to the sports class with short shorts.
Mm.
You know, very short shorts. There's no rules about how short a short short can go for the boys. But if it's anything more than 10 inches from the knee, 10 centimeters from the knee, oh my gosh.
Mm.
That thigh is so gosh darn distracting to those other boys.
I mean,
that, you know, it's not permitted.
When I was a teenage boy, if there was another teenage boy wearing short shorts exposing his thighs, I would have been distracted. So, yes, I mean,
no.
The double standard is
that
not
is
just
the double standard. Yeah,
it's not just that it's over sexualizing women's bodies. It's also under sexualizing
men's bodies,
but also under sexualizing women. Because if you think women are not looking at your thighs, then you got another thing coming. They're not chauvinistic about it, so it's harder to tell.
Really, these rules are only set up for boys interested in girls' thighs.
Yeah.
End of list.
Yeah.
Girls interested in anything else don't count.
Yeah.
Boys interested in anything else don't count. Anyway, so we saw this protest, and these bunch of boys went in, and the principal called them out, and they were like, look, you know, what is this?
And from the pictures, they were wearing the shortest version possible of
some
skirts.
I think they were varying degrees of short. And I read this and I was like, is this really a story? Except it's kind of exploded all over Quebec.
Yeah.
Like, there are a lot of schools now doing this. Now, in all fairness, the CBC and other media outlets have interviewed some of the girls at these schools.
Mm-hmm.
And the girls are a little bit disappointed that, you know, the boys wearing short as skirts has, you know, to raise the issue of sexism, has all of the media talking to the boys about the sexism that the girls are experiencing.
Yeah.
And all the girls are in the background going like, sorry, excuse me, over here, wave, over here. You know, we're the ones that have the skirt rules to begin with. So let's start off by acknowledging that. Like, there is a distinct privilege to be able to get all of the media attention.
Well, it's like watching the news and then, you know, a tenured professor in African-American studies comes on and gets interviewed, and it's always an old white dude. And there's got to be at least one tenured professor of African-American studies in America who's actually African-American. They did a bit on this on Veep. I don't know. I was watching Veep with your gentleman caller.
Yeah, my fiancé.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, he's a step up from a gentleman caller, I feel like. I mean, let's be honest, you know.
But, you know, so, it is peculiar that, I mean, they were the ones who attracted the attention. Fine. So you,
and it was big, you know.
Yeah.
Around the sort of 9th of October, moving into the following week.
Yeah.
They were
like,
about,
it would make sense if the boys were the ones with the microphone in their face, but the girls should be the ones getting the actual in-depth interview.
Yeah.
So
about 100 boys at Collège Nouvelle Frontière in Gatineau, Quebec, were the ones that was in the media when I was starting reading. I think it started out in Montreal. I'll try and get the name of that that school in just a few minutes. But yeah, it was quite an interesting thing. But, you know, some of the teachers responding have essentially said, you know what, this is obviously a bit of a distraction for the whole class. When 100 boys show up in skirts, everyone's going to be talking about it. I remember my high school days.
Yeah.
Everyone's going to be talking about it. You know, and of course, that is a touch distracting. You know, apparently, weirdly enough, a lot of the private schools, like two or three people showed up, and then it just fizzled out. Like, it hasn't really got very far with those schools yet.
Yeah.
So what is the issue here? The issue is that they are taking issue with a few different things. One of them being that, like I said earlier, there if a boy is wearing very short shorts, shorts of really any length.
Mm.
At some of these schools, there's absolutely no rules about how long or how short your shorts can be. So for boys, there is nothing regulating the length of thigh that they can expose to the world as they're leaping and jumping around.
Yes.
Now, for girls, there are rules about how high up your skirts can go.
Mm-hmm.
Because any higher, the rule is that, it can't be there. Presumably, it comes from this idea that it would be distracting, it would be provocative, and what have you. And essentially, the boys are like, no, that's the stupidest thing ever. Like, why is this rule only applicable to girls and not applicable to the boys?
Yeah.
Either there's no rule
or
the rule applies to everyone.
And aren't they wearing school uniforms? Like, shouldn't it just be like, you have your issued uniform and you are not allowed to alter it?
Yes, except you can get skirts of different heights, or you can lift them up higher above your belly button and what have you. Because I would, my
yeah, you tuck it or you fold it
exactly.
In.
Yeah, exactly. I grew up in the UK, and there were school uniforms there, and there were definitely some ladies trying to get attention who would roll the skirt so that it sat a little higher.
Well. When we did the last skirt protest we covered was about 2 years ago, and it was in Britain, and it was kind of similar but opposite, where the boys had one uniform for the whole year and the girls had like a whole range.
Yeah, the boys had to wear woolen trousers.
Woolen trousers all year round.
Or pants, woolen pants.
Even during high heat of summer. And so some of them just
because they go until June. Yeah. So the middle of June, heat wave, you're in woolen pants.
Yeah. And it's England, so of course they got no air conditioning because it's so cold most of the year. Anyway, so yeah, they just started wearing skirts. And when the teachers were like, why? They're like, well, because a bunch of them were passing out from heat stroke.
Yeah.
And they're like, well, technically the skirt is part of the school uniform. So, and there was actually no restriction saying that.
There was no gendered rule on the
There was
the
no
skirt.
Gendered rule. Yeah. All it said was that you had to wear the uniform. So they just started wearing the uniform. And then in the end, some of the schools like cracked down on other ones were like, eh, you know, we're trying to be progressive anyway. Like, we don't know if there's a trans kid out there. So a lot of them were like, if it's in the book of pieces of the school uniform, you can wear anything from there regardless of your gender or... Mm-hmm. time of year. You're trying to be an adult. Pick appropriately. Pick seasonal appropriate clothes. Go for it.
You know, I think that, you know, for me, what this protest does is it raises those core assumptions that, you know, a girl is responsible for how the boys will react. Not the boys responsible for their own reaction.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? It makes these young girls responsible for other people's behavior and whether or not they are distracted, as opposed to these boys getting a grip on themselves, not in that way, but you know, getting a grip and actually managing their own reactions. You know, I think it is fundamentally unfair to make the girls responsible for that. If it is a rule, like I said, it should be universal.
Yeah.
And you know, a lot of the schools in Quebec have actually gone around and said, okay, let's talk about, you know, double standards. Yeah. Let's have a conversation about what happens when a boy is in the skirt. Is, you know, let's talk about toxic masculinity. Mm. Let's talk about LGBT people. You talk about, you know, giving trans folks the room to be able to move around.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I think the skirt protest, although it's nothing we haven't seen before on our show because we cover internationally, you know, within Quebec, in this cohort of school students, it has started some very important conversations.
Also, the weird thing is, it's not just, they're not wearing a skirt. They're wearing a kilt.
They're wearing the school skirts.
Yeah. And kilts, historically, are gender neutral. In Scotland, anyway. It's just, it's a thing that you wear. And like, skirt is the historical origin of the word shirt. Like, the two of the words are related historically. And, like, there were men's skirts and women's skirts, just like there's men's shirts and women's shirts. So, like, men wore skirts until, I think, like, the 16th century or something like that. So, I mean, like, I don't know. I bring this up because I have a summer skirt that I wear around the apartment. I don't know if I'd wear it in public, but I do wear it if it's a heat wave and I'm at home.
See, if my kilt fit me better, I have grown a touch since my high school prom.
Yeah.
I would wear that in the middle of summer.
And it's not like a poodle
skirt.
It's nice
and breathy. Yeah, absolutely.
It's a men's skirt. It's not a Western men's skirt. It's an Indonesian men's skirt, but, you know, whatever. It's comfortable. So, I mean, it's, I don't know.
People absolutely.
Can, people can chill.
Well, we were talking about how perceptions and things affect how people behave a little bit more as we talk about sleep.
Oh, yes.
Just after this song break. Can you let me know what is playing?
Yeah, today I kind of chose music based on the fact that I don't know who they are, because I like to do that every so often. Well, no, actually, no. We'll start with the ones that we recognize. So, Low Life Lolas.
Big fan. Yeah. Huge fan. I think they're out of Toronto.
Yep. They're, well, I mean, most of the bands, most Canadian indie bands, you're going to have, like, you know, the singers from Toronto, the bassist is from Montreal, the... There's always someone from PEI, even though it's a tiny little island. There's like a drummer or a violinist.
They export a lot of musicians.
They do
export. Number one export, musicians and potatoes.
Musicians, potatoes, and...
And the Green Gables.
And the Green Gables swag, yeah. And I wish I were joking.
Sorry, PEI listeners.
No, but it's a real thing. A huge chunk of Japanese tourism to Canada is driven by PEI.
Because they all go to...
And the Green Gables, yeah. Jeez Louise. But anyway, yeah, so Low Life Lolas with Sad Songs, and after that we'll play Kings of Our King with Little Astronauts.
Absolutely. We do like Kings of Our King. We played them a lot when we first got a hold of their new album, and Little Astronauts is quite a fun little song.
It's cute.
It's cute, we like it, and we will be back just now.
Thank you.
welcome back, Sebastian's Mums, to our great show this week. This is Ken Queer, home of Canada's queer media. We're going to make it a thing. We will make it
a thing.
Oh, my
God. Uh-huh.
Now, is your actual mum, like, the head of the Sebastian Mums?
Apparently.
We're going to have to get her, like, a badge. Like, a little badge that says, weird if, yeah. Number one Sebastian Mum. Yeah. Stop. Yes, no, that's fine. Okay, well, let's talk about this. I want to talk about, have you ever had the manliest nap that you ever did nap?
I got narcolepsy. I do that every day.
Yeah, no, you can't walk 5 feet. Yeah, no, really, I'm asking the wrong guy here. Did you have a manly nap? You're so, like, as a man, I nap.
This topic is actually kind of close to my heart. There is that sort of...
Well, it's close to your pillow anyway.
Well, yeah. Sure. Well, tell you what. Introduce it, and I'll tell you how...
And we love these things called, you know, a gay study. I have a category on my Feedly, a gay study. Mm-hmm. And when ridiculous things come up, we like to talk about it. So then this one. It was a research published in the Journal of Association for Consumer Research. Mm-hmm. And essentially they looked at 4 or 5 different studies into how men perceive sleep.
Yes.
Now, as humans, we do need a certain amount of sleep in order to be able to continue humaning throughout the day.
6.5 to 9 hours, depending on the time of year and your own needs.
Mm-hmm.
It's actually quite varying. Yeah.
Absolutely. Now, so if you're clocking in at 4, 4.5, not great. Not great.
They do that, actually, in some of the Latin countries. They sleep for 4 hours a night, but that's because they also have siesta culture. So if you nap for an hour in the afternoon, that offsets the deficit.
It all adds up.
Yep.
Yeah, you hit your, you know, one cycle of your deep REM.
So, I mean, if you want to talk about manly napping, then you'd be talking about, like, I don't know, like a toreador. What's a toreador in English?
I don't know. I don't know what it is in Spanish. Oh, I see. Bullfighters.
That would be a manly nap.
This was helped by the fact that you did the motion for holding the little thing. Of course, our listeners can't see your hand gestures.
They know what I did.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, the red thing. Do you know the color? The balls are colorblind.
Yeah.
It's the motion, the little waving that attracts
the red's attention. There for the audience, really.
Yeah, so you don't see the blood.
But yeah,
Now,
there is this notion, weird notion. I think it's especially Western, and I think it's especially that sort of like Protestant hard work kind of modesty of labor. Yeah.
You've got to wake up before the rooster wakes up. Otherwise, you're the cock.
Real men get up early. Real men get up at 4 o'clock and then they
bring home the bacon.
They work for they work out for an hour and a half. Like, you got to get up at 4, go to the gym, build your muscle. No time for napping. Stay up late doing, I don't know, protein something. And then it's this bizarro sleep deficit cycle that just goes on and on and on and on.
Yeah.
But
it's not good.
It's not good. And I have definitely noticed it because it is part of my regimen. Like, I haven't actually passed out in years because I've gotten very good at monitoring my sleep cycle, making sure there's certain times a day where I can drink caffeine and I'm fine. And there's something called a paradoxical reaction where caffeine actually makes you sleepy. Stimulants actually put you to sleep. And I'm usually pretty good at predicting when I'll have a paradoxical reaction and when coffee will actually wake me up.
Yeah,
so, I mean... Yeah. There's a lot of monitoring involved, and like little 8-minute naps in the afternoon are really good for me. But there is this kind of thing that comes up where, you know, somebody will find me napping at my desk and they'll be like, well, you're not a hard worker, you're not whatever.
Well, yeah, I mean, at that point you're looking like, look, you can get 2 hours of like very unproductive work or an hour and a half of very productive work and 30 minutes of me cat napping.
Well,
you know, those are your options.
I wouldn't nap for 30 minutes, I might ask, but
you would you would like 5 seconds, you would just blink and you've napped. Or...
No, it's a very specific kind of weird pseudo nap that people with major sleep disorders have, where like your body shuts down and you're completely awake the entire time, and then all of a sudden you feel like your body just booting up again, and like diddly diddly do do do, like that Windows sound plays, and then you're fine, and it takes.
You should get that checked out. If every time you fall asleep, the Windows theme tune kicks in.
No. That's when you get back up, you hear.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
Still, you should get that checked
out. So, it is this peculiar thing that lack of sleep is considered somehow masculine.
Well, yeah. So according to this, they said that there was research where, based on how much sleep men faced, there were various social judgments. For example, getting less sleep was being, you were viewed as being less assertive, less individualistic, less goal-oriented. So if you didn't get up at 4 a.m. in the morning, you were less motivated to achieve your goals.
There's nothing more individualistic than saying, hold your horses.
I need a nap.
I'm going to nap.
So when they were asked, you know, how does it feel when you say, I sleep more than the average person? Or how does it feel when you say, I sleep less than the average person? Mm-hmm. What they found was that when they were asked about sleeping more than the average person, it made them feel less manly. And it made them feel more manly and more assertive when they said, you know, I sleep less than the average person.
Yeah.
You know, it's not, you don't get brownie points and like gold stars or a ribbon for having less sleep. Yeah. You get fatigue. That's your prize.
This is actually one of the reasons why I'm very iffy about Joe Rogan. Because, like, the rare occasion when I watch or listen to Joe Rogan, it's because of the guest. Joe Rogan himself says weird things about health. Like, he brags about not getting enough sleep. I don't think he realizes he's not getting enough sleep. But he stays up late and he gets up early.
Mm-hmm.
And he doesn't, maybe he'll nap in the afternoon.
Well, Donald Trump says to have only do about 4 hours of sleep. And
he's definitely hooked on stimulants. People think he's senile. I think he's just hooked on stims.
He drinks a lot of Coke. Oh, full sugar. God, yeah. Full caffeine Coke.
Here's,
like, it's a thing.
Unrelated. No, related. Somewhat
related. Drinks Diet Coke,
but kind of just a point of interest. The two global populations with the highest rates of major sleep disorder, especially narcolepsy, but not exclusively narcolepsy, are Japan and the French. And if you watch a lot of anime or anything from Japan, it is super common for people to get so excited they pass out. It's actually a reflection of the fact that in Japan, it's actually super common for people to laugh so hard, be surprised, be so shocked or whatever that they pass out. That actually happens. And then France are the inventors of the fainting couch. And those old stories that you may have read about, like people going to poetry reading and passing out because the poem was just so beautiful, that is also partly a reflection of the fact that narcolepsy is super common in France and now in French Canada,
wow,
which is part of where I get
So really, if you're a manly, manly man, you need a fainting couch in case that sleep catches up with you. Absolutely. Now, you know, lack of sleep or continued...
Matador, that's the word.
That's nicely done. We are referring to the bullfighter.
Yeah.
You know, there are serious health income impacts. For example, it's been tied to increased rates of heart attack.
Yeah.
Increased rates of diabetes. Yeah. Increased rates of depression.
Yep.
Now, men have a suicide pandemic.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it is ridiculous the amount of men who suffer from severe depression and suicide ideation.
I think
I'm not saying taking a nap will cure it, but it may help.
Taking a nap helps a lot of things, especially when it comes to anything.
We're not medical doctors.
No. But it is a known fact that a good night's sleep improves most things, especially anything to do with like your liver, kidneys, adrenal fatigue. Like there is so much literature out there. You've probably heard about the replicability crisis, that a lot of scientific studies cannot be reproduced.
Mm-hmm.
This is false when it comes to sleep. Every single study that has ever come out about sleep has been replicated dozens of times. So it's anything you've ever read about sleep on a reputable website, at least like WebMD or the Mayo Clinic, it's probably confirmed a dozen times over. So definitely get enough sleep. It does not make you weak and unproductive. If anything,
it doesn't make you less manly.
No.
I don't know. I feel like getting diabetes and heart attack and increased depression and mental fatigue, for me, that's less manly because you're not taking care of your health.
This actually makes me think of that movie that we watched together about a couple of weeks ago where the two of us stayed up late and watched Starship Troopers again.
Oh, gosh, yes. And oh, my days.
There's that one scene, that first time they get on the dropship and they're dropping down in the atmosphere, and there's the one guy who slept through the whole thing. And that guy did not come across as a sissy. He came off as, like, tough as nails of just being like, well, I'm going to get 30 seconds of shut-eye while we border on the edge of death. Wake me up when we get there. Like, that guy was manly.
That guy was manly. Now,
I think he got torn apart by a bug, though.
That's, I mean, yeah. I mean, less likely to happen for our listeners. Now, I will say this. We're going to play a couple of songs in a few minutes, and we're going to be talking about, you know, gay marriage possibly coming out in India. We're going to be talking about the census in the UK, and what else we got here? Gay panic in Australia. So if you feel like you want to be more manly than listening to those conversations, we have about 30 minutes left of the show. Go take a nap. For those who want to stick with us, those are what we're going to be talking about. But for those who want a manly nap, I encourage you to go sit down,
or close your eyes. Lay down, close your eyes, and listen to
us. And listen to us, yes, like a podcast. You can find us on Spotify and other places if you want to take your podcasty nap. With us.
Don't nap if you're currently on the road.
No, don't. Driving. No, absolutely. If you're driving, please don't nap.
Or if you do pull onto a shoulder, a protected shoulder, so that you can nap properly.
Absolutely. Yeah. So that's my advice. That's what's on the agenda. A couple of songs, some international news. But if you're too manly for that, take a manly nap, and we will see you in just a few minutes. We're going to be jumping to our next couple of songs.
Yeah.
And they are.
We're going to start with Places Erupt. Now, we actually interviewed them about 8 years ago when we were new, but because of a technical difficulty, the entire recording got lost.
We were that new.
And then a year ago when we were at that conference, a year and a half ago, we were at that conference in Toronto, and we ran into the cellist. They were called the Theory of the Free Man back then, and the cellist recognized us, and apparently they all remember being interviewed by us and said that they enjoyed the interview and they regretted not being able to hear it. Anyway, so Places Erupt, I really like pushing these guys, and then... with their song Touristic. And then following that is Leanne Hoffman with Turning the Truth.
And we will be back just after this, unless you're napping, in which case, sweet dreams.
Yeah.
I'm roaming like a buffalo, footprint that's 24, in a Bible called The Lonely Planet, that always tells me where to go. Maybe we can go to the temple.
Oh,
And welcome back to Canqueer, home of Canada's queer media. My name is Stilick Smith.
And I'm Sebastian.
And actually, you had me rolling on the floor laughing a minute ago because you casually mentioned, you know why the gays are always late to things? I mean, there is this idea that you set a time for something and there's like the normal time when people arrive. And then there's the gay time when gay people arrive, which is about an hour and a half later.
When you and I used to have house parties, we would tell people different start times
based on whether or not they were gay or straight. Because like straight people show up pretty much on time.
Yeah. Yeah.
Gay people show up about an hour and a half late.
The good ones, it's either an hour and a half late or 20 minutes early because they want to help.
Yes, yeah. Yeah, which is really difficult if you've given them the gay time. Because they're really early. Yeah, absolutely. But you said the reason why they're late is because they nap.
They nap, yeah.
And, you know, I laugh because it's so true. When I was younger and there was a thing I had to go to, I'm like, you know what, I'm going to sit down, close my eyes for 20 minutes. Yeah. Get ready, get dressed.
Refresh myself.
Yeah. And I always showed up late. Absolutely. Yeah. Hands down. About an hour and a half, give or take, 90 minutes. That's my track record. You know, it's a bit of a stereotype, but it's definitely one with a kernel of truth in it, I think. Now, let's talk about a country that really doesn't care about this decision that's come out. The European Court of Human Rights has yet again ruled against the state of Russia.
Ugh.
Now, a bunch of LGBT activists, let me lay the scene for you. I'm going to do a bit of storytelling here.
He rolled up his sleeves.
I rolled up my sleeves for this.
Yeah.
It is June 2013, and there are LGBT activists protesting the it's essentially the no say gay rule in Russia.
Yep.
It's a law against promoting LGBT lifestyle.
They called it the anti-propaganda law.
Yeah. But now, by the way, sidebar, there are single gay men with kids fleeing Russia because just being gay and having a child can put you in prison under this law. Mm. It is huge. There are now gay refugees who have done nothing except exist and have a child.
Yeah.
There are currently people fleeing Russia. So these protesters, on one side, you've got your... some of them are homosexual, some of them are allies, you know, protesting this ridiculous law.
Yeah.
And on the other side, you've got very Christian Orthodox Russians throwing eggs at them, you know, being verbally abusive.
Yeah.
Not going to lie, I reckon some of the LGBT protesters were probably abusive as well. Don't think they had any eggs, but neither here nor there. Side A, super Orthodox Russian Christians. Side B, LGBT people saying like this law is very discriminatory.
Yeah.
Now the police show up. They round up all of the pro-gay protesters, shuffle them onto buses, and then arrest every single one of them on administrative charges. Essentially, they said that these pro-gay protesters didn't let them know that they planned on having a public gathering.
Is it the old they didn't get a permit?
They did not file the paperwork. So therefore, every single one of them will be now arrested. Now, the question is, were any of the also large group of Orthodox Christian Russians who were throwing eggs arrested?
I'm willing to bet.
Not one of them was one of them was arrested.
Oh my God.
So all of these LGBT Russians get arrested, charged, and in the police paperwork, they reference the pro-LGBT slogans. In the court cases, the judge references the fact that they were pro-LGBT. So the European Court of Human Rights, Russia, not in the EU, but is party to that treaty. But essentially, what this European court has said is like, look, Russians, you essentially rounded up the gays. You charge them all for protesting.
Yeah.
At that time, it was not illegal to protest.
And
maybe they didn't have a permit, but you didn't arrest any of the Orthodox Christians.
If they had arrested both sides, they just would have been a regular police state.
They would have just been doing their job and arresting people without permits.
Well, it would have been heavy-handed either way.
Well, I mean, Russia has a bit of a track record.
Yeah.
So, I mean, essentially, Russia has now been charged, been found guilty of this, and they've been ordered to pay every single one of the protesters €5,000, in damages.
Oh my God.
And Russia plans on just not. So, yeah. I mean, it's an entirely symbolic win. Now, the pinknews.co.uk very helpfully let us know about some of the other recent victories for gay rights at the European Court of Human Rights, mm-hmm. which the Russians have promptly just ignored. So, for example...
I mean, you have successfully summarized the Russian attitude, which is, yes, but how about I don't?
Yes. Okay, we'll defend it and fight you so that we don't look like we've lost. But once we've lost, whatever. Yeah. I wasn't even playing anyway.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So, in 2018, they lost a case with the ban on Pride events. In 2017... they lost a case that found that their gay propaganda law violated human rights, which is the one that these protesters were originally protesting. And earlier, they also lost a... they were issued fines for violating the freedom of association because they were blocking LGBT groups from registering people. Mm. So in the last 5 years, they have now lost 5 cases at the European Court of Human Rights. And the Russians are zero bothered about it.
Yeah.
I mean, it's nice to know that there is some accountability for the Russian state. But this is it. this is the extent of their consequences.
And then, like, what's the EU going to do?
So I want to quickly capture some of the big stories. Australian state, like a province essentially, of South Australia is joining in the rest of Australia and the Western world by removing the gay panic defense. Mm. Essentially, if you are in a murder case, a manslaughter case, blah, 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 essentially anywhere where you are guilty of an intent and...
Or even just... any violent crime.
Yeah, but primarily these are used in murder cases. So let's say you are, you know, there is a, you're a man and there's a man coming and the man, you know, you're dating or something and the man goes, I'm gay, or you wouldn't be dating.
Yeah.
You know, you're like, I'm gay, and you freak out, you go temporarily just insane. You lose every one of your marbles.
Yeah.
All at once. And you cannot be held liable for your murderous outcome. Because you have lost each of your marbles upon finding out that a person is gay
mm-hmm.
or trans,
yeah.
etc. That is the gay panic defense. I am sorry, Your Honor. I completely freaked out, went Lulu, and lost all of my marbles, and therefore am not guilty of the heinous murder I have just done.
So this became a... This was no longer considered valid in Canada as of around like 2003 or so. I was living in Hamilton at the time, and there was a guy who's pretty active in the community. I knew him through friends of friends of friends of friends, and he got glassed. So if you're not familiar with that term, it's a common term in England where glassing is tragically common, where you take a pint glass and you just smash it into someone's face, and you can disfigure someone for life depending on how the smashing happens. And he was grossly disfigured because he got glassed. And during the defense trial, the person who assaulted him said, I thought he was hitting on me.
Yeah.
And it just turned out that the guy, he owned the bar and he was just going around making sure all of his customers were happy.
Yeah.
But the guy perceived it as him being hit on.
And he just lost his little marbles.
And he used the gay panic defense. And the judge at the time said, you glassed someone. Like, that guy's going to need years of plastic surgery to get back on his feet. Do you think this is going to work? So he set the precedent of being like, no, that's a stupid argument. And then as a result of that, people actually took it to the Supreme Court and said, like, this is precedent now in Canadian common law. But can we just state outright that this is no longer valid? Yeah. And then they did. They're just like, yeah, no, like it's assault.
Just because someone's sexuality does not mean that you get away with murder or grievous bodily harm. So now, yeah, South Australia is actually joining the rest of the progressive world in banning that
mm-hmm.
as a legal defense. In New Delhi, in India, there are two different cases going before the New Delhi High Court. One is arguing that the Marriage Act from the 1950s discriminates against a same-sex female couple and is against the Constitution. A second one...
Only the female couples? That's a really weirdly phrased...
No, the one is a female couple taking it to the court.
Oh, okay.
And then in the other case,
okay,
there is a male same-sex couple taking the Foreign Marriage Acknowledgement Act to court.
Okay.
Because they tried to get their marriage acknowledged in the States and brought over, and that was also... So they've come at it from two sides. Yeah. Marriages within India, marriages outside of India.
Yeah.
Both of them are at the New Delhi High Court. We will be watching that to see how it goes. Gay marriage in India has been an ongoing discussion for years now. And the last one we have time for on today's show is the British Office of National Statistics, which is StatsCan for Britain.
Yeah.
StatBrit would have been what I call it.
Okay.
No, ONS is the very boring name, is what they call it. And essentially, in 2011 was the last time they had a national census. And they've never asked whether or not any Brits are actually gay or not. Well, they did in 2018. They did a small poll.
Yeah.
And they found that about 1 in 50 Brits identified as LGB, which is actually smaller than the Canadian proportion, I think, because those stats came out recently. But now, for the first time ever, the Office of National Statistics will be asking your sexual orientation. Mm-hmm. But they'll also be asking, what sex were you assigned at birth?
Yeah.
And then prompting, does your gender identity align with your sex at birth?
Yeah.
So they will be asking, which is, by the way, guys, the dictionary definition of trans.
Yeah.
You know, does A align with B?
Yeah.
End of list. And they are going to be, for the first time, being able to identify, for those who disclose, you know, on it.
If you get the long proportion. Form.
No, this is going to be every single
time. Every single time, okay.
Yeah, absolutely. So this is really huge news for British LGBT charities. And for nerdy statisticians in the UK.
Yeah.
Yeah, really exciting news all round, I think. But we've run out of time.
Well, nerdy news.
But, nerdy news. Yeah. We're kind of nerdy over here.
Yeah. I mean, all throughout the break, I keep showing you pictures of this sexually alluring cat. I can't get enough of this photo. We're going to play out with the last song, Century Thief, which is a side project, actually, of the Places Erupt group, which is how I found them. This is a little bit longer. That's what's going at the end. But anyway, it's Century Thief. The song is You Are Here.
I've been Luke Smith.
And I've been Sebastian. And thank you for listening.
Before the shops all change owners overnight, the cars rust.